This is Sporting News Director of Photography, Paul Knisley, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 101, A Photographer's Sony Service Nightmare. In this episode, Sony Service may need some revamping, Smug Mug steps up, Canon's working on the edges, Usain Bolt has a demand, Think Tank's shapeshifters get an upgrade, and a tiny camera slider hits the market. All that and more in episode 101 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Paul, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Paul Knisley has a pretty sweet job. He's the director of photography for Charlotte, North Carolina-based Sporting News, a now online-only publication that's been in constant publication since 1886. No, not 1986. You heard right, 1886. That makes it over 130 years old. Amazing. Paul holds a BFA in photography from the Rochester Institute of Technology, was a photo editor, then sports photo editor for the Associated Press, and has been with the Sporting News for coming up on 21 years now. If you're into sports, of course, and you enjoy great sports images, head on over to sportingnews.com. And if you'd like to check out Paul's work, you can find that at paulknisley.photoshelter.com. And Knisley is spelled N-I-S-E-L-Y, by the way. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 101 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. It's interesting how many people think that I've given up on Sony just because I bought a Nikon D500 for sports rather than making it work with my awesome A6000. I feel the need to preface this story with that, lest someone think I'm bagging on Sony here, because I'm not. There will definitely be more Sony cameras in my future, no doubt about it, and other brands as well. In fact, follow me on social media, where I'm LensShark, by the way, because there's a brand spanking new camera arriving in my hot hands here shortly in the next couple weeks, and it's not a Nikon, it's not a Sony, it's not even a Canon. So if you follow me over on my social media accounts, you're going to be seeing what I'm talking about here soon. All right, so back to this story, and this one involves Sony and a really bizarre series of events, as told by photographer/videographer Amir Zachary. Less than a year ago, Zachary bought the awesome Sony A7S Mark II, but suddenly everything stopped working for him. He'd press the record button, and the camera would just freeze up on him. So he contacted Sony support, who had him send the camera off to a third-party repair center that they use, thinking that everything was going to be okay, because they were like, yeah, that's covered. Send it on in, we'll take care of it. Well, not so fast. Now, some time went by, and he didn't hear from the repair center, so he contacted them. And I'd like to point out that we've heard this many times before when it comes to Sony repairs, most famously brought to our attention by Matt Granger down in Australia. Usually, with companies like Canon and Nikon, you get an email from them letting know that your gear has arrived, you get a support ticket number and all that, you can log into your account on their site and check the repair status at any time in the process. With Sony, however, things seem to be a little bit lacking in the customer service experience as it relates to their repairs. Some attribute this to the relative newness of Sony cameras and their popularity causing the issues, but come on. They've been selling cameras long enough now that they should be able to figure this thing out, and they're making an incredible amount of money. So this might be an area to spend some of that money, I think. Zachary called the repair center and was shocked to find out that they were saying his camera showed signs of water damage and thus wasn't covered by the warranty, so they sent the camera back to him. Now, he points out that his camera at no time spent any time in the water, so this was an impossibility. He got the camera back and he called Sony again, and they're like, all right, send it in to us, we'll have a second look at it. But this time, he was shocked to find out that they had an entirely different story for him, saying that it was corrosion damage to the camera. He alleges that they didn't even open the camera. And so he asked him for proof, and they sent him a photo showing the bottom of his camera and showing that the screws were corroded. And that was evidence, they said, that corrosion had killed his camera. Now, Zachary points out that he lives and works in Hawaii, so of course there's going to be corrosion because there's sea salt in the air, and it's not something that you can really avoid, can you? But that apparently didn't matter to the repair facility, and this proof of damage, the corroded screws on the underside of his camera, was enough to void the warranty, they said, and leave him out of luck with his $3,000 purchase. Imagine finding out that your $3,000 camera is now useless, something that you use in your work to make your living. That would just make me insane. And this made him insane too, because this nonsense took 2 whole months, and at the end of the day, nothing was done to fix his camera, so he took to YouTube to tell his story. When you try to go the regular route of dealing with the company and you don't get any satisfaction, taking things public is often a good way to go. You know, I found this out myself recently with a non-camera company. I had put support requests in 2 times, and they didn't respond either time, which led me to believe that they just don't respond to people's customer service requests. So I took to Twitter and all of a sudden got their attention. You know, a lot of people think social media is completely useless and just a place that you post your selfies or pictures of your food or whatever, but you can definitely get a company's attention that way. Now, as you might imagine, reaction to Zachary's video was mixed, with one Reddit user saying, quote, "Sony has the worst customer service ever. It's a pain. I love their products, but what often keeps me from buying there is the fact that I have zero trust in customer service and warranty," end quote. Another user was critical of him, blaming Zachary's location, saying, quote, "I don't condone the third-party repair center short sale, but it's pretty obvious that it's not Sony's fault for creating a faulty camera. Using an electronic device that's not specifically weather-sealed in a salt spray environment is asking for trouble," end quote. Listen, if he was down at the beach every day, then maybe it's asking for it with Sony's bodies, but there was no mention of that. And if a particular camera cannot operate in climates such as those found in Hawaii, then perhaps they shouldn't be sold to people who live there. Or the company can make it known that just as there's temperature limitations for cameras, perhaps Hawaii isn't the best place for a Sony, right? I mean, that seems reasonable. Don't blame the conditions in which people shoot if you're going to be happy to take their money and sell them cameras. So the Petapixel mothership reached out to Sony for comment after this thing went crazy online, and they told us, quote, "We are aware of this video and the customer is in the process of being contacted today for a replacement camera. He may have been already, as it's important to us that all customers are treated appropriately and fairly when it comes to service issues with our cameras," end quote. Now, a check of the video reveals that Zachary has indeed received a replacement camera from Sony, so all is good on that front now. And I decided to do this story because it's similar to ones that we've heard for many months now about Sony repairs. I don't know if they're overwhelmed with the great success that they've had in selling their cameras or what, but they might want to put a little bit more thought into how they can better take care of their customers once they've purchased their cameras and issues arise. Otherwise, people have no choice but to take things public like Zachary did, which just causes people who are on the fence already to perhaps pass on buying a Sony, and that can't possibly be worth it to them. You know, tens of thousands of people are going to hear this story and may now pass on a Sony camera. Just as many tens of thousands of people saw the post on Petapixel, Reddit, etc., Zachary's video on YouTube, and wherever else it's been. Probably been seen hundreds of thousands of times, actually. One really public incident like this, and untold money is lost for Sony. So that should be incentive for them. But to be fair, as I've said, Sony finally did step up, you know, after 2 months of their third-party repair facility rejecting the camera for 2 different reasons, and that's a little bit unsettling. So I think it's worth telling that side of the story here as well, you know? Sony cameras? Awesome. Sony repairs? Could perhaps use a little bit refining. Sony customer service after going public? Well, he got a replacement camera. So there's that. Next. You know, many years ago, I had a SmugMug account, and we're talking, oh, this must have been 8 or so years ago. And I tell you, there's some ridiculously good people over there at that company. It's part of their company's culture, and they make a big deal out of that for a reason. They want to have a good time, and they want to serve their customers. If there's anything that you ever need that requires contacting their customer support team, they've always been very quick to respond and incredibly helpful, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many others. So it doesn't even surprise me even a little bit that they saved the day for countless users of the now dead PictureLife service, and as a result, have rescued over 200 million of their photos. PictureLife was a photo storage site which shut down recently, leaving its users unable to not only access, but download what they had stored on the service. And for many people, I would imagine, that was their only copy of their images. Which, of course, is never a good idea. You know, eggs, basket, right? If your photos and files, for that matter, don't exist in multiple places, you're just one shutdown, bad hard drive, theft, or whatever, from losing something that you can't ever replace. And if they're family photos, no bueno. I mean, imagine losing photos of your children, for instance. Not cool. Now, the folks over at SmugMug are not only great people, they're also great at business too, and this proves it. Saving the day for who knows how many thousands of PictureLife users just isn't going to be a bad thing for business. They stepped up when no one else did, and again, I'm not at all surprised. And the best part is they're not holding the photos hostage. You know, they could have easily charged people to gain access to them, but they didn't do that, so I applaud them. In a statement, the company says, quote, "Our number one concern is putting as many PictureLife photos and videos as we can into the hands of their rightful owners. We're making their photos available to them at no charge and no obligation. If some of PictureLife's former customers want to become a part of the SmugMug family of photographers, we'll welcome them with open arms, but that's not our primary goal," end quote. If you're one of those who suddenly lost all that you had uploaded to PictureLife, there's an FAQ page that's set up that explains how easy it is to get everything back. All you have to do is click the Retrieve My Photos button at smugmug.com/picturelife, then verify your PictureLife account info with your email address / username and password, of course. Create a SmugMug account using their 14-day free trial, then select your privacy settings and begin the transfer process. I think they've made it pretty darn simple for people here. Once that's completed, you'll be able to download all of your files for free and close your SmugMug account before the 2-week free trial ends, or keep them right there and sign up for one of SmugMug's paid accounts at a 50% discount. I tell you, they're great business people. You've got the option of getting your photos for free or signing up with SmugMug and saving 50%, so that's pretty cool. Now, they'll never tell us this, of course, but I'd love to know if it was worth it for them. Will they gain enough customers to make it worth the trouble and expense, or is it a complete waste of time and money for them? Even if they don't break even with this, all the positive PR that they're getting by helping people out to retrieve their photos will certainly get people to feel good about their brand, and that's only a good thing, right? You know, it's smart business. They are in the position to make this happen. And you only ever hear good things about SmugMug for a reason, because they go out of their way to help people, put good vibes out there, and be good corporate citizens. So I really appreciate that about the company. And you know what? We can't really say that about every company now, can we? I don't want to name names. You know who they are. Next. If you've been following this podcast for a while, you know that I'm a massive fan of ThinkTank Photo. When I was a photojournalist, their modular belt system kept my back from getting worse than it already was, and you just can't kill their gear. I mean, it's that amazing. Everyone who's got their stuff knows that. Well, one of their most impressive and popular products, their Shapeshifter line of backpacks, are now at version 2.0, and they're pretty darn awesome, I think. If you're not familiar with them, the Shapeshifters are designed to be pretty low profile when you need that, and expand quite a bit when you require more gear to make the trip with you. The Shapeshifter 15 version 2.0, Shapeshifter 17 version 2.0, and the Naked Shapeshifter version 2.0 all feature an outside tripod attachment, a roller handle pass-through sleeve, and water-repellent coating. The 15 and 17 models are designed for 15-inch and 17-inch laptops, respectively. The 15-inch features a camera kit which will hold a flagship-sized DSLR and 3 lenses, and the 17 holds 2 DSLRs and 4 lenses. The Naked Shapeshifter 17 is brand new to the lineup and features removable pouches or lens changers inside, so you can configure that to your liking. So basically, the modular belt system pouches of theirs that I love so much attach to straps inside that backpack, and there's room for their modular belt in there as well. It's a pretty sweet design and a great way to extend the functionality of the modular system that they have with another solution for transporting your gear. Otherwise, you have to do what I did for many years, which is toss your belt with all the pouches attached to it in the back of your trunk. But if you're flying or doing whatever, that's not exactly the most elegant solution. Completely empty, the Shapeshifter version 2.0 backpack's compressed down to just 3 inches. So if you got your gear on you, you're more easily able to move through crowds as you got the backpack on you without knocking people silly. You know, I've seen this happen before, and I tell you, some people are just clueless when they have a big backpack strapped to them. It's amazing. All three Shapeshifters are available right now, and if you're thinking about getting them, of course, or anything else, doesn't have to be camera gear, consider hitting my Amazon affiliate link over at lensshark.com. It's a great way to support this show. The Shapeshifter version 2.0 goes for $250 US, with the 17 going for $280, and the Naked Shapeshifter 17 comes in at just $220. But remember, the latter is going to require the modular belt system pouches, so you got to keep that in mind. They're about $20 or so. And if you got them, you know how awesome they are. Next. When you're Olympic champion Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world, and you're in high demand, you can make things happen. Bolt is a man who knows what he wants, and he wants his home country to benefit. Jamaican-born Bolt is saying that from now on, he will only do shoots in his home country of Jamaica. Why? Because he wants to do what he can to help his country's economy and give back, he says. According to an interview he did with Television Jamaica, Bolt said, quote, "When we started out, people always wanted to do shoots in Miami, Los Angeles, and all over the world. We decided that, you know what? We will be doing a lot more shoots. So any contract we sign, the shoot has to be in Jamaica, so we can give people jobs and help people," end quote. You know, with being the fastest man in the world comes a great deal of endorsement money, and he's done ads for the likes of Nissan, Virgin Media, Digicel, Puma, and many others. The 9-time Olympic gold medalist has helped the people of his home country in other ways through his foundation, which has donated millions of dollars to the country's education system. According to Bolt, 1 to 200 people would have temporary employment as shoots are done in Jamaica, and with the pull that he has, these companies are likely to accommodate his request so long as they can get the job done with the workforce available to them there. Meanwhile, post-Olympics, Bolt is celebrating, let's say, with females from other countries, as we've seen in recent days in the media. So there's that. Next. Recently, I've told you of some patents that Canon has for super zoom lenses, which we may or may not see. I'm leaning towards not see, because they're just unbelievably crazy. But one thing that seems certain to see the light of day, pun intended, is a new sensor, which promises better performance at the edges. If you follow the nerdier side of photography, you know that it's hard to get the best possible performance the further you get out toward the edges of a camera sensor. But there's a recent patent from Canon which aims to solve this problem. As you know, light travels in a straight line, right? So that light that hits the sensor is hitting it at increasingly steeper angles as you get further out towards the edges. Now, a couple of years ago, Sony explored the idea of curved sensors, but thus far, we haven't seen much on that front. Canon, though, is trying something completely different with convex micro lenses at the edges of the sensor in an effort at better directing the light to the photodiode. This decreases the angle at which the light hits the sensor, and if all goes well, it should reduce not only color fringing, but vignetting at the edges of the sensor, and thus your image. Now, if true, that would be a huge advancement in image technology and something completely different than what we've had thus far for many years now. There's no word on whether or not we're actually going to see these materialize, but if we do, that would be another big step forward for Canon, and not so great news for Nikon. Poor Nikon, right? Remember, Nikon gets most of its sensors from Sony, and they withhold the best for their cameras, of course. So with Nikon operating with a lot less capital than Canon and Sony, you could see the disparity between the sensors in Nikon's bodies and the others grow immensely. You know, at some point, one of these companies are going to have a real breakthrough in sensor technology that propels their cameras well past the others, and everyone's going to wonder what the heck hit them. Sensor technology is where it's at, I tell you. And that's not exactly been Nikon's strong suit, so they need to get with the program here and do something. In the meantime, though, I'm enjoying the heck out of my Nikon D500. That is a wonderful camera right there. If it had a better sensor in it, even better. But you know what? It's pretty darn awesome the way it is. Next. Edelkrone is doing some pretty darn outside-the-box kind of things, which really appeals to me because I'm an outside-the-box kind of guy. I mean, you've listened to this podcast, of course, so you know what I'm talking about. And one of them is a new slider for your camera without rails called Wing. The simple-looking device attaches to your tripod, and in the unique way in which it does so, allows your camera to travel smoothly in a line, much as traditional rail-based sliders would, but in a more compact and really awesome way. When fully collapsed, it's just 4 inches in length, which is amazing. That's a little over 10 centimeters, by the way. But extended provides up to 16 inches of travel, also known as 40 centimeters. They've designed it in such a way that it stays out of your shots, even if you're using a wide-angle lens, so that's going to be a big plus right there. However, all this innovation comes at a cost, as you might imagine, and that might be a sticking point for a lot of people. If you're interested in one, this bad boy is going to set you back $250 US. But you know what? Sliders are rather expensive anyhow, so that's actually not too bad. Manfrotto's, for instance, cost $350, and you can find fancier ones out there for a whole lot more money than that even. I think this thing is pretty darn cool looking, but seeing it hang the camera way out there like it does makes me a little bit nervous. I'd have to test one out to be confident in sturdiness. You know, for that much money, I'm guessing it's pretty solid. And of course, you're going to want your tripod to have a fairly wide stance to make sure you're good to go, just in case. You know, if they want to send me one, I'll test it out and let you guys know. But in the meantime, I like how they've made something that's really cool so portable. And being portable is going to mean that so many more people are going to bring it with them, I think. Again, if this thing's well built and sturdy. If it's not, not so much. Now, if you'd like to check it out, hit the show notes for episode 101 at petapixel.com/podcast, where we'll have the link for you. You may never want or need one of these things. You know, if you're not shooting video, it's completely useless to you. But if you got a minute, I think it's worth checking out. Again, it's my belief that we expand our creativity and knowledge base, of course, when we learn new things, think differently, and ask ourselves, is there anything that we can gain from this that'll move ourselves forward somehow? So to that end, I think it's worth checking it out, seeing what it does, and seeing if you can apply that to what you're doing. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 101 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And I've got a tiny bit of an after show, so stay tuned for that as well. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 102. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
Okay, I really don't plan on having an after show for each episode, but never say never, right? I don't know, we'll see. But the feedback that I've been getting about episode 100 has been amazing, so I want to tell you a little bit about that here. You know, it's always fun to do a little bit of Q&A, and it was a lot of fun for me to answer your questions that you had about this show in that special episode. Episode 100, you won't be surprised, is already our most downloaded episode, and we welcome all the new listeners that gave us a shot thanks to finding out about this important milestone in our podcast history. In the after show for that episode, I told you about how long it takes to edit this podcast, about 9 to 12 hours for a 25-minute show, which is an insane amount of time, of course. So at 46 minutes, that episode took 17 straight hours to edit. That's crazy. I planned on breaking that up across 2 days, but unfortunately things came up and I had to do it all in one day. But you know what? It wasn't too bad. It's kind of brutal, but it was fun, especially the after show part. Now, many of you commented about how fun it was to hear how my daughter's voice had changed in the 11 months since I recorded it for episode 1 and episode 100. So I'm going to play those back to back. But not only that, I'm going to play the one from my old show, the Lens Shark Photography Podcast. That's the show that I had before teaming up with Petapixel. Basically the same show, just a name change. So in a minute, you're going to hear her from December 24th, 2014, for episode 1 of that old podcast, when she was barely 11 years old. Then, 9 months later, on September 12th, 2015, as we started the first episode of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. And finally, a little over 11 months later, on August 20th, 2016, a few months shy of her 13th birthday. every 100 episodes, which is, you know, about 2 weeks shy of a year. So basically every year or so, I'm going to have her re-record one, and that's going to be pretty darn interesting to hear how her voice changes across the years. Imagine what it's going to be like 5 years out, 10 years out from now. Amazing. All right, so I'm going to play those now for you, and with that, I'll see you all in episode 102.
Please subscribe to my daddy's podcast.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
This is David J. Murphy reporting for Around the Lens. Noted podcaster Sharky James has surpassed the 100 episode milestone. To celebrate the achievement, Sharky was seen taking a selfie while sitting on a couch on railroad tracks with a drone. We'll publish the photo as soon as it's finished processing in Lightroom. Next!